Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that blows your headphones off your ears. How you doing? We have Scotty, we have Jimmy, and 313. He's working his ass off as usual. Good man. Keep paying taxes. Keep my pension going. Jimmy's pension. Go. One of these days, Scotty's pension. Hopefully. All right,
yeah,
kid.
Yeah.
Giving it all back to you. Have a good show.
There you go. Well, real quick, I seen that Lake Orion is not going to have any production this week. They said they had some, they're going to speed the line up and they had to make some adjustments somewhere, I guess. I don't know if that has anything to do with the chip shortage or not. I seen they're going to have some layoffs at Chicago Assembly, somewhere else, due to part shortages. And Fort Wayne, Arlington, and man, I'm so ill prepared. There's three places that are General Motors are having problems with chips right now. So that's just a lot's happened this last week. Crybaby Robinson got sentenced to a year in prison. There's so many crimes that these guys were not charged with. It's unreal. Just so many crimes.
We got Adrian too, by the way.
Cried so much Lake Erie went up 3 inches, man.
There you go.
I mean, what a piece of shit. Bitsy does the crime, but because I wore a wire and I ratted because I'm a piece of shit, I don't need to do my time yet. All these bastards are getting to keep their offshore accounts now. It is said that he has to repay $300 million, was it, and had to pay $42,000 in restitution, I believe it was.
I think it's $300,000.
Okay.
Yeah, it's $300,000.
You're right.
The $30 million is the guilty plea from FCA. For their alleged illegal payments. Now, you understand, side note, that $30 million is going to be paid out of the profit sharing.
Oh, yeah. You can count on it.
Right. So, you know, people need to understand that. So, that's just part of it. But
I'm going to rat on this guy, so it's all right. I ain't heard of one of these bastards having to give up their offshore account or another pension or a retirement. Hell, they're proving to me crime pays all the way across this country, even if it's not in the UAW. You look at the corruption of the union today, and it continues to get worse because those that be in the, let's say, the governmental issues, offices aren't pushing to stop this shit. They're giving it the okay and my permission. Maybe I'm wrong. Hell, I've been wrong before.
Right. So what happened was his lawyers and the prosecutors urged they be spared for helping convict two former presidents and secure federal oversight in the beleaguered union, right? So I like the paragraph that said, the surprising sentence left Edward Nick Robinson sobbing, quivering, red-faced, and gulping deep breaths while hanging his head after begging the U.S. District Judge Paul Borman for a break.
Mm-hmm.
Borman gave Robinson a break from the advisory sentence of 30 to 37 months in prison because he wore secret recording devices and volunteered to help prosecutors. So he was up for almost 3 years, 30 months and 3 years, and they gave him a year. And he's 73 years old, so know where that's at, but he has to pay. I'm looking for the amount, Jimmy, because you're right. He has to pay a restitution and a fine, I believe, right?
I believe it was $300,000, and then he had to pay $42,000, and if I remember right, that money was going to the IRS.
Okay, yeah, here it is. As part of his sentence, Robinson reached a tentative agreement to pay $300,000 restitution to the UAW. I wonder if that's all going to come back to us. Yeah, right. and $42,000 to IRS and forfeit golf equipment, including 12 club shoes and more purchases with embezzled union money.
No.
But why isn't his membership taken away from him?
Good point.
Good question.
That's the main thing. All of them should lose their membership.
That's
fraud.
Right.
Embezzlement.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. It's so disheartening. It seems like anybody right now that's connected with high dollar, and I don't care if they're red, blue, right, left, if you're union, non-union, it seems like all these corrupt crooks that get dealt with all this money, all of them are just getting a slap on the wrist.
Yep.
And that's it. It's ridiculous. Somebody like you and I, you know, you might as well kiss
the
bike. You ain't kidding, ma'am. We
throw us under the jail and tell us we owe millions of dollars, and we got to pay it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think Jimmy's right. It pays to be a crook, a white-collared crook, and you just get a slap on the wrist. You get a year in prison, and look at all the money you get to keep when you come out.
Well, now, you know that when you go to jail, you have to pay.
Didn't Eagle Valley get a swimming pool?
Yeah.
What'd you say, Jimmy?
I thought Eagle Valley got a swimming pool and a fancy car, and then that King lady, she got a Christmas card-making company she started in prison, and that's turned into a multi-million-dollar charity. I mean, Jesus Christ, people, come on. You know, I don't understand that. I got into a big time with a young person the other day that's a UAW member, and if I'm wrong, excuse me, but all you got to do as a member of my union, the UAW, is we are required to attend, I think it's 9 meetings a year, so they postpone one to the summer. And when you go to that meeting, if you bring up an issue and it gets voted on and passed, as long as you have one more member than that person, then you got means to hold them to the fire and make that happen. But you younger people, I'm sorry to say, or younger members, whatever you want to word them, with less seniority, don't go to these meetings, so you're getting shit shoved down your throat, yet you're blaming, oh, retiree did this, the retiree did that. Let me tell you kids something. I go to that meeting, and every time I go to open my mouth, I get a fish shoved in it because I don't have a vote. So
that's
if you don't
right.
come to meetings, you ain't going to change shit. And if you ain't, if you're going to cry, have a tool. So I'll give you a little tip. I'll work with you. But if you're going to stand there and expect I'm going to fight for your ass, I'm grabbing my fishing pole and boogieing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well.
I think he said it all.
Yeah, we get blamed for a lot, we retirees.
Yes, we do.
I couldn't believe it. It was my fault, and I'm looking at him as a son. I can't even dock in here. How the hell is it my fault? I didn't pass gas.
Okay, don't make
me let me try 313 again. Just let him know I know he's there. 313, it's quiet. What happened?
Uh-oh.
Oh. He must be having us on mute. Well, that's fine.
Me and Scott was hoping you could say it was Ralph White.
Oh, no.
No, come on.
Not 313. Not Ralph.
No.
I know. Ralph
is
not
good to call.
Call, but they just don't know how to push that magic number one, do you, fellas?
Yep. We get a lot of people in the switchboard. If you'd like to join the show, push one on your keypad, as Jimmy just alluded to, and I'll get you on, especially if you're 313.
Did you see that shit about doing with Lordstown, Scott, that they're going into, looks like a test production until this fall, and then by this fall they're getting backed by General Motors, as we know, to produce this vehicle, and a lot and financed by General Motors, which, you know, I don't see how that's a win for the UAW. We gave up very good paying jobs at Lordstown. to a membership that gave and gave and gave to the UAW in the union meeting. And then my international sits on them, and like my sister says, even though they've been found guilty, you don't even throw their ass out of the union. There's something's wrong here. We need to take back control.
Right, and they're going to use the dealer network for those vehicles, too.
That's what I mean. The only one that's winning is GM's getting a vehicle made with cheaper labor and a lot of it. And the UAW, they don't give a shit because they're still taking their percentage of dues. It don't matter if you're legacy, tier one, tier two, all the way down to temporary temp or whatever. You're going to pay some type of union dues, and that's all the union seems to care about. They know the electric cut's coming.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I'm going to get back on electric in a minute. I said something about the Ford plants at Chicago, Ohio. I stole your article from you, Adrian.
Oh, no problem.
But it is going to be, it looks like they're going to have some cut in production and temporary layoffs at the Chicago plant. It wasn't confirmed as of the time the article was written yesterday, but it looks like Chicago assembly will be down for two shifts will go down. They'll be laid off in 2 weeks or a week. Two shifts will be. They're going to go down to one shift. The other plants that are affected are the Dearborn assembly plant, which makes the 150, the Kansas City, which makes the 150, and the Louisville assembly plant, which makes the Ford Escape, the Lincoln Corsair, and then the Chicago assembly, which makes the Explorer, the Police Interceptor, and the Lincoln Aviator. So, you know, I mean, and they're saying this is all COVID-19 related. So it's affecting people. I couldn't find the one that I had put up there with the Fort Wayne and Arlington, and the third one. I'll keep looking for that one. But
okay, let me get 517 on, Scotty. Hang on for a minute. It's spinning. 517, you're on.
Hey, how's it going, team?
Hey.
Hello.
Hi, Dwayne.
How's it going? Hey, I got a few updates, but still nothing really positive. So I talked to my daughter tonight, and so the reason why she got let go was because entry protocol. So even though she got in the plant and worked, you know, a few days, they put her on notice, as you all know, you know, the reason why it was COVID protocol, but she didn't know she had COVID until, you know, she told her supervisor.
Right.
So she met with, she didn't meet with him, but she did hear from her committee man, shot committee man, and they're telling her what, you know, they always, you know, what you want to hear. You're going to get your job back, blah, 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 you know. Still, you just can't go on that, you know. Still waiting for word from the international rep, because I feel that that's the person that's going to have to come in and resolve it or not. What I can't understand is this is going into week three. What is labor doing? You know, they're not saying anything to the people inside, to the committee man and the shot committee man when they meet with them. So it's like a stalemate there. So that's what I'm saying. When does international come in? I mean, how long are they going to drag this out?
Well,
the ball is
in
their court. They can drag it out as long as they want to because you didn't follow a protocol. That's what they're saying.
Right, but still, I mean, the international has to come in at some point. Are they just going to keep dragging it out between the SOC committee man and the committee man?
They have to bargain for her to get her job back.
Right.
Well,
that's all I can tell you is that they have to bargain for her to get her job. Is your daughter there with you?
No, she's not.
Oh, okay.
You should have her call in, too.
Yeah, we need to talk with her.
Yeah, I probably would, but, you know, I don't know if she would or not, but, you know. I'll ask her next time.
Well, I'm going to put it to you this way. Your daughter is an adult. I mean no harm to you, okay? Because I have a child that also works in a facility. Sometimes as parents, we can give them advice, but we can't take over for them.
Exactly, and that's what I'm doing. You know,
learn this stuff. You know that we're saying, so that she can put a file up in her brain on things that this is what I can do, this is what I should do, these are the steps that I take. It's better to get it firsthand than to get it secondhand, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, I understand you fully. You know, I can only tell her so much.
Yep.
I can tell her all I can, but at the end of the day, she's going to have to make the decisions, you know,
right,
to fight for her job.
That's
and I'm
right.
pretty sure she's doing all she can, but, you know, she's, you know, she said it's in stage two. I'm
okay.
telling her, you know, that she told me still in stage two, so that I guess stage two is still within inside the plant.
Okay.
I guess I'd still, I don't understand what the protocol, what she broke.
I don't either, because if you broke the protocol that day, she should have been terminated that day. They shouldn't have let her continue to work.
I'm going to tell you, it doesn't sound like she broke the protocol that day. I'm going to tell you that
no.
she broke the protocol before that day.
Dwayne, you said
Probably.
Stage, I think you mean step two of the grievance procedure.
Yeah.
I believe,
step.
If I'm not wrong, unless they've changed it since my involvement, the district committee man has now passed that grievance where it can become a second step. It's now at the shop. The shop man has
right.
5 days to discuss it with management, and then he has an additional 5 days to move it over to the region. If he does not move that, if he does not move that grievance in 5 days, you can kiss that sucker goodbye, because they didn't move, he didn't move it in a timely manner, and your daughter gets caught in the middle of a bunch of political stuff. I got wound up at two different times. One time it took me 2.5 years to get to the umpire or the international to step in, and the executive board that time of the international, and they ruled that it had to come back and re-vote. So I got a bunch of people to come back into the plant. I had a union meeting on a Sunday, and I had a lot more than one vote, so I won. And they brought it back in the plant and reinstituted my grievance. What I'm trying to tell you is they're playing on time frames right now. That guy's got 5 days to get it off his plate and move it forward. You're into those time barriers, and I'm sorry to say, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it, it's your daughter's job. She should be on here listening to every word we're saying, because it's her future, but she might be looking at your, you know, your inheritance. Oh, I don't know, but I would think she would be a little more concerned right now about her job, is what I'm trying to say, Dwayne.
Yeah, well, you know, I think something should be happening this week, because like you said, at 5 and 10 days, you know, and we call the, I called to the Flint office, and they told me, you know, it has to go through the regional office here in Lansing. She called there, left a voicemail, no response from the office here in Lansing, from the regional director.
The regional office in Lansing, that's what I'm trying to tell you. The regional office is over here in Vance Lake, sir.
No. What I'm talking about is for the regional, the area director has an office here in Lansing.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but I called down in Flint. I called it Flint, and they told me. They gave me the number, and they gave me the address. So there's an office here in Lansing. So I told my daughter she needs to go over there and, you know, just see who's in there, you know. If they're not going to answer your phone calls, go over there. It's right here in town, so I'm hoping that she's going to do that Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Also found out it's in the other locals, I heard it was one person in Flint. I don't know if you guys heard about it, Scott, or whatever. Somebody said, well, my daughter said it, there was another person in Flint area, the same issue, and a couple more here in the Lansing area.
Well, I wouldn't do it. It sounds like it's kind of vague.
Again, do not let her go there by herself. I don't give a crap, man. Not pay someone, her alone, you alone. You make sure there's two on your side. And a recorder would be good.
Just get one of those little recorders, too.
All right.
Well, I remember talking about that last week.
We'll go back to the writings, okay? Go back to the national agreement, okay? On the grievance procedure, step two is appeal to the shop committee. That starts out with paragraph 31. Goes through, you get to paragraph 34. Okay. A final decision on appeal grievances will be given by a representative of the highest local management with a maximum of 15 working days from the date the first written filing thereof, unless a different time limit is established by local agreement in writing. Any grievance not appealed from a decision at one step of this procedure in the plant to the next step within 5 working days of such a decision, so that's a total of 20 days total, shall be considered settled on the basis of the last decision, not subject to further appeal. However, the plants where there are less than 2,500, they're just going to shorten the time up. All right, so then it goes to paragraph 35. Like I said, you need to look at the contract. What does the contract say? Well, step three is appeal to the Corporation International Union. That's paragraph 37. And then you go to paragraph 38, which I believe is at that point, 38 and 39 is basically going down to the umpires. So, I mean, there is some time frame here, but they've about exhausted that time as far as a timely fashion. So,
what?
I mean, you could try the regional. I didn't know we had like a subcommittee or a sub-building for the Region 1D in Lansing.
I didn't either until I found out. Because I tried to talk to the head guy down there and the secretary, and she wasn't having it. She gave me the number and the address of the office here in Lansing. And I forwarded that on to my daughter. And, you know, I'm going to see if I can get her to go over there. I'll go with her tomorrow. I mean, we don't have nothing but time, so...
Right.
I find it
kind
of strange, though, that all these people are talking to you.
Well, you know, I'm making all the calls and stuff, you know.
Yeah, but see, it's not you. It's
right.
How do they talk with you about somebody else's case?
Well, they just giving me some advice, you know, where the office is and everything like that, you know, but. They're not really telling me that, you know, well, we're here and there, or, you know.
They're very
you know,
lax.
I have a few contacts, but still, you know, still, they're just telling me that, you know, you got to follow the procedure, you know.
Well, then
so
you need to read
week,
the... Go
she
ahead.
Has the contract, you know, and I told her to look up the grievous procedure. The date that I had was January 11th that the grievance
That's when I wrote the first grievance.
Yeah.
All right.
So we should be coming up on that 15-day period.
Past that already. You're heading to the extreme time limit in which it needs to go to the next step. I believe
yeah, but why
days.
Why would they keep? Why would they
That's
keep telling her that? You know, they shouldn't be tell. They should be telling her that. Okay, we're moving this on to international.
Because they're trying to get you to time it out, and then just say, "I'm sorry, hon. There's nothing more we can do." Play that game, Dwayne. They play on people's ignorance. They know they're probably right now listening to this phone call. In fact, I can goddamn guarantee it. You know, they can get the fox out of here, too, but that happens. And so knowing that, they're just going to let her play yokey-doke or whatever you call it and give you your time. Trust me. Like I said, I went 9 years, 2 months. And, brother, they all told me I was getting paid. You know how much money I got paid for that? A big flat donut. Didn't even get credited service for that, Dwayne. I was lucky and got my job back for one reason and only one reason only, is they did not give me a 76A interview for the conversion from a suspension to discharge. Discharge you. They got to suspend you, investigate it, then discharge you so you get another day in court. Well, I had the guys that are all wearing ankle bracelets now, you know, Norwood. Oh, in fact, a couple of them got these pine boxes, you know. They're down in these pine boxes, Ratson, and what was the other one there, Mike, you know. But that's okay. They're getting theirs. The creator will judge them. That's not my job. But what I'm trying to tell you, don't listen to any lip service they want. In fact, I got to the end. When they were telling me off, I sat in region over there on Van Slyke, and I even told the director, I grabbed my zipper. I says, I want any more lip from you, buddy, I'll shake my zipper. You hear me? Talk to my attorney. After I got that mentality, shit started happening. They knew I wasn't playing no more.
Yeah, well, we got documentation and stuff stating what they've been saying, so...
You need to find out where are these grievances at, what step are they at, and at what time is the servicing rep from the regional office going to be stepping into that, because you need to let them know the time frames in which the contract states under the grievance procedure. It tells you the times and days on this. And tell them, look, doesn't know what the contract said, you know. And if management and the union have agreed to hold us out longer, it has to be in writing. Well,
ask them this straight up, and they're going to know you're not playing no more. When are you having your key four meeting on this case? So if they can't give you a date when they're having their key four, they're giving you lip service. That's the manager of the plant, the head. Labor, the president's local, and I believe the chairman. Sometimes they can replace the chairman with your servicing rep, but that has been said not they shouldn't do that, because then when it goes to the international at the third step, it can't go to the servicing rep, because like I told you, as the grievance gets passed up, it's supposed to go to clean hand to clean hand, meaning people cannot know anything about this. So if he sits on the key four meeting, he can't be your person at the international, and they don't like to do that.
So the key four meeting, is that in the contract book too?
Yes, sir. Everything that we have told you is in that little dirty white book.
All right.
Paul, you're on, by the way.
Greetings to your rabble rousers.
Greetings, sir.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, anybody that's in trouble between the UAW and management needs to realize we don't have leaders in the UAW anymore. They're afraid to make decisions. They're afraid to offend management. They're afraid to offend the higher up in the union and make them look bad. So that's one of the things you're dealing with. I was involved with Jim's case. Jim Mattis's case as a member of the board, and, you know, it's just a complete travesty. Jim should have been back to work in a very short period of time.
You mean not 9 years?
Yeah. I knew I couldn't taint the case, so I didn't say anything, but I sat with the arbitrator for lunch. I didn't tell him who I was or anything, but I asked him how long it usually took to get a case to umpire, and he said about a year.
About a year. Yeah, geez.
Jim's only got there because of intense nagging. You know, they realized it wasn't going to go away, and they finally took the case to the umpire, but
right. In
my opinion, they were ill-prepared.
Wow. Jesus.
They behaved like they, you know, in my opinion, the people in the union behaved like they believed management's story and not Jim's.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know what was going through their head because I didn't pick their brains, but,
yeah.
You know, I would have put a different level of effort into it if it had been me.
You know, they didn't use the police report.
Yeah. I went down and got the police report myself as a member of the board, but they wouldn't give me all the information, but they would have given that to a bargainer. And to my knowledge, nobody from the entire union, nobody I talked to ever went down to get a copy of the police report. It would have been easy for them. You know, Region 1C was, about 2 or 3 miles from the Flint Police Department. And, you know, that's what you're dealing with, people that are, I believe you have a lot of people in the union that are not competent to do their jobs. They were moved up because they were somebody's kid or because they performed in a way that made the higher-ups happy, and they aren't up to the job. It's unfortunate. You know, to me, when you investigate a grievance and you go through everything, you want to know the who, what, when, where, and why. And often those questions are not being asked, and answers are not gotten. The UAW is just really pathetic. I mean, it's the fact that we have 15 people that were indicted tells a story, because, you know, there was 15 people indicted, but how many dozens or hundreds or whatever people knew what was going on and said nothing? Because it wasn't good for their career to speak up.
And yet and still, the trustees are still walking around free as hell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's because in the UAW, basically, the lower-level union people have blind faith in the people at the top.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with the trustees?
Well, they're lower-level official, and instead of asking the right questions, they just put blind faith in their leaders. I mean, let's face it. Had to be a ton of people that knew what was going on.
Everything that the executive board is doing when it comes to finances or whatever has to go through the upper level trustees.
Right.
That's
yes.
what I'm.
Okay. They have a fiduciary.
Yep.
Who?
It's been one of my big
fiduciary obligation to the membership.
Right, correct.
That's
okay,
kind of one of my big questions.
Not,
what were they doing?
Well, they have to sign off on a lot of things that deals
yes,
with money.
Right.
And if they're just signing, then they're not doing their due diligence. So why hasn't anyone went after any of those trustees?
That's a big question I have in my mind. Maybe because they weren't big money people.
Huh?
In other words, trustees don't command the big salaries and whatever that some of these top level officials were getting, so they let them off the hook.
Oh, no.
They were a willing participant.
Yes.
Oh, I agree with you. I'm not, you know, the thing is, if you look at what happened after World War II and the Nuremberg war trials, the defense a lot of these Nazi officials used was that they were just following orders.
Paul, what you probably don't know is, I don't know if you're aware of, the officers just got a 31% raise with this last bullshit around
right.
here, you know about, right?
Was that was voted for at the convention?
Correct.
You know, by how many hundreds of delegates? That's what I'm talking about. These
people
are.
Why that went through is because those officers found out the trustees were already making $250,000 to $300,000 a year. They've been getting little raises taken 3%, 10% every year for the last 20 years. Nobody's been getting nothing. Your upper-level trustees, they're probably the biggest ones of all, are they not, I would think, Adrian?
Yeah, they're – I don't know exactly how much they make, but like I say, when you're a trustee, the way the laws are set up,
right?
You can't just sign off on stuff just because this one told you to sign this.
Yeah.
No, you're supposed to do a mini audit at least.
Yeah. And you're
okay.
supposed to question things.
Yes,
and they're
supposed
to be there for the benefit of the membership, but just like that. How many delegates do you have at a UAW convention?
Well,
somewhere around 1,000, I think.
Yeah,
but
let's explain. Wait, hold on. Before you go there,
okay. So
that I can explain something, because I don't know if you know, but at that convention, they decided that the regent would vote. The delegates of the regent would go through the regional director, whomever, and they would do one vote.
Yeah.
A lot of the regions did that. So it wasn't each individual delegate having a vote.
But they did agree to go to that system, and it's a foregone conclusion wasn't going to happen. When you ask people and their lackeys whether they're going to vote in a pay raise, I mean, there's a foregone conclusion. These people haven't shown any financial restraint probably in the last 40 years.
I don't ever remember them getting a 31% raise, though. I don't remember them getting a raise that was that high.
No. What I'm talking about overall, they've shown no restraint. Why is it they started taking money out of the strike fund in the 2006 Constitutional Convention? There was probably around 1,000 delegates there. And I was one of three people that spoke against taking $60 million out of the strike fund. There's no opposition to what these people want. Half the people go there are sitting on their hands. They're like first-time delegates and wondering what's going on. The other half are there to find a trough to feed at. This is just a woefully corrupt system.
Yeah, well, you know what, I can't really argue with you on that. I have to agree with you somewhat on that. Most of the delegates that go there, they're blind, some of them.
Blind.
Some of them are a part of the caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever the top says, they're going to go along with.
That's what I mean. It's a one-party system. Back in the 1980s when Jerry Tucker wanted to run for regional director in the Kansas City region, he was fired as his position as a servicing rep because he was not the choice the International wanted running for that position.
Right.
And he appealed it all the way to the Public Review Board, and the Public Review Board said that the UAW is a one-party system, not unlike the system in Russia, and what the people at the top of the union decide is the law within the union. And this is the wacky system we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's produced a feed-at-the-trough mentality. When the Ruther brothers pulled this thing all together, they weren't getting money from management, and they were in direct opposition to management. But now they've all jumped into the same rowboat.
Wow. Well, as far as Dwayne goes, you need to find out what step these grievances are at, who's dealing with the grievances, and let them know that you're dealing with a time constraint and that you know that your daughter needs to let them know. that she knows that there is a time constraint and that you are within that time limit is being pushed to exceeding that time limit, and that it further needs to be dealt with at that point from the regional office. That would be through the servicing rep.
Right.
So, you know, or like Jim said, ask them when the next Key 4 meeting is. That's going to be addressed.
Yeah, that's
at the Key 4
meeting. That's what I'm getting ready to tell her now after I get done listening to the show.
That's usually once a week, too, by the way. The Key 4 meet, I believe, every Monday morning, don't they, Jim?
That is correct. It's got to be once a week. I don't know what day.
Yes.
Usually it is on Monday or Tuesday, but they are
right.
Required by contract once a week.
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
I guess I don't know who they met with Friday, but they just told her that, you know, looks like you're going to get your job back. But, you know, you just can't go on that.
No.
I can tell you that. You know, they're just telling you what you want to hear so you can get off their back.
Yep, that's right.
So, the phone calls I would recommend is if you have a phone call, I'd have that on speakerphone so that both you can hear what's being said and you write stuff down. But you got to have some questions set up and make sure you get them answers to those questions. And they will beat around the bush and try to redirect. But keep them focused and bring them back to the task at hand. You know, who's handling this and when is it being handled?
They're good at
that. Key 4 meeting is with the plant manager, labor relations, shop committee man, and committee man, or servicing rep.
Right. It could be. It could be usually it's the local president, the shop chairman, the head of labor relations, and the plant manager.
Okay.
They could bypass, but at this point right now, I would think that the servicing rep would have been into the plant and try to find out what's going on.
By this time, he should have heard about it, if not by now. But what I'm trying to tell Dwayne, yeah, there's other means to get it reinstituted. But like I said, when you go past your time frames, now you're counting on other people to hold their hand up. You have time of day to come to a union meeting and support your daughter. Don't let them play these games because, trust me, they make a lot of these rules, and when you fall off the edge, it's very costly and timely to get back in. They did this shit to me twice. It cost me 6 years.
Right.
Yep. So, I mean, you heard from Adrian and Paul, Jim, you just got to stay on these guys. That's all there is to it. Your daughter has to.
Right.
I mean, it's admirable you want a champion for your daughter, but she needs to let them know that she's going to fight this.
Right.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Game is, don't worry about it, I'm going to get you paid. And then that union thinking, it's kind of like a rot and decay in our mind anymore because it doesn't happen. Well, shit, I've been off 4 months now. That's $7,000-$8,000. That's money in the bank. Well, then you don't get it. Then your heart's broken. Then you feel like you were lied to. And you were.
Coming up on that 30-day period where that health care is going away.
Yeah.
She can cover the health care.
Yeah, but that costs them. That's not cheap.
Yeah, no, it's not. That's why she got you as a father, so you can help her.
Well, I'm trying to get her, you know, before we reach that point.
I get it. Believe me. I get it, but, you know, like I said, there's other means.
Yep.
And you can't be too proud. You got to go out there. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay.
That's why I'm trying to get. That's why I'm trying to fight this battle right now. You know, staying on
yeah,
top.
I get it. And like I said, I have children, and both of them are union members. One of them's UAW. The other one is not. They have another union, and
Oh, yes. We have lots of discussions about different things. They know to read those contracts. They've read their contracts. That's one of the things, you know, that I always say. Reading is fundamental. Read.
Mm-hmm.
Know your rights.
And well, I think the problem, there's a lot of people in union leadership positions that don't understand the nature of their responsibility. They've been trained in compliance with management's wishes. When you look at the whole framework of our contract, our union leaders are no longer warriors, they're diplomats. You know, they like to brush things off. They don't like to make any waves. They don't outright sell us out. They just sell us short. Because they won't stand up and fight the way they used to.
But a lot of times we allow that as union members by not knowing. Because, as I said, you have a contract. You read it. And if your committee people are saying something different than what's written in that contract, you want to know why. You push them.
People also need to get acquainted with federal law, too. You know, we have rights under the law. A lot of the rights we have, they don't come from that union management contract. They come from federal law. I mean, the reason you have, say, in a union election, you have the right to observers, it's not because the union wants you to have those observers, because federal law gives you the right to have one.
And that's why you had the EEOC and the NLRB and all the other civil rights laws and things to protect
right.
you, too.
That's it.
Matter of fact, a contract really does not overrule any federal, state, or local law.
No, it doesn't.
Hear, hear.
Yep.
But it's still important for you to know what your rights are.
And a lot of these laws don't, unfortunately, don't have the kind of teeth in them they should. You know, it's like, you know, you look all through these appeals processes, whether it's with government agencies or whatever, the union can violate your rights with impunity. But if you don't dot every I and cross every T, you're screwed.
Right.
This is true. This is true. So there's a lot of due diligence that your daughter and you have to apply this week, it sounds like. And I think everybody's trying to give you some sound information, right directions. And I would still say, on top of what they're doing, I would still have your daughter get a hold of the National Labor Review Board. That's
yeah.
just saying.
Yeah, I mentioned to her, you know, about the 180 days. But when she talked to that EEOC person, they told her that it has to go through the grievance procedure. So we're in a grievance procedure at, like I said, stage two or whatever, or step two. So it's got to be a point in time when they're going to have to say, hey, you're not getting your job back. And then, you know, then from what I can understand, the EEOC takes over, or the National Labor Relations Board, we had
right.
to file that process there.
Right.
But until
well,
the union, at some point, the union has to come back and tell us you're not getting your job back, you know?
Well,
I mean, are they going to wait 6 months to tell you you're not getting your job back?
Yeah, no, they can't. We know better than that. And I told you, out of the contract itself, they basically have about 20 days from the time this grievance is written to get to this process. And they're dragging their feet. You need to let them know that, your daughter needs to let them know, I'm aware that there's time constraints on this. Why hasn't this been settled by now?
Right.
Let them know that, hey, not only do I know, but now you know that I know. So.
And did she file for unemployment?
Yep. She's getting
okay.
that.
Good. Good. Because if they were to deny that, there would have to be a hearing.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to get Carrie on real quick. Hang on, Carrie, you're about to be on. You're on. Hello, Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, I'm at work.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to kind of go ahead. I want to shift gears a little bit real quick if we can. I joined Don's show last night for a while, and we were talking about...
Yeah, I was surprised.
Well, it all started because my wife made a post, and the fact checkers put the stuff down as false. So I did a crash course in about, I don't know, about 2.5 hours, almost 3 hours. I was still working on it when the show had already started, and I was trying to get all my thoughts and stuff and my notes together. And basically what she posted was about 85% true.
Okay.
So I kind of see where some of the fact checkers might have said something. But upon further investigation, not only did I find out that it was probably more on the information was kind of linked wrong, but all the names, the times, the dates all kind of played in together. And when we put that out there, it was pretty evident. All you had to do was follow the money. So with kind of like what happened last night, I'm looking at what's been going on this last week or so. So what we have is, I don't know where to start with this, so I'm going to put it this way. Our new elected president has signed an executive order that will require the replacement of the entire fleet of federal vehicles with U.S.-built electric cars, vans, and trucks. That's 645,000 nationwide. Okay, so whatever the purpose of that is, that's neither here nor there, right? So what I did was I looked into this a little bit further, and what it is he has, oh, geez. Make it simple. $70 billion is what it's going to cost if you was to replace the entire U.S. automobile fleet with electric vehicles. $70 billion. Okay?
Yep. Look out,
so,
out Lordstown.
Right. So
okay,
then when I started looking... Go ahead.
No. I want you to go ahead. So $70
billion. Okay. $70 billion, 645,000 vehicles nationwide. All right. So then I start looking at all the things that are associated with this. Dodge come out. This was reported 2 days ago from Ronan Glahn over Autoblog. And they have talked to the individual's name is Kuransky. I can't get his first name. He is the person with the Dodge around their automobiles. He said we are in the way of 1972. He says because of the electrification of cars going on the way, basically what he's saying is that Dodge was warning that that regulations are going to kill the V8 engine. I'm thinking, okay. So we had something come out saying they're going to try to get away from the V8 engines because of the regulations. And then you find out that Dutch Shell, is to acquire the UK's largest electric vehicle charging network. I'm going, wow, that's something. And then you had General Motors made their big announcement that their goal is to eliminate gas and diesel vehicles by 2035. They're going to be completely carbon neutral by 2040. I'm going, wow. And then come to find out that they had GM's now partnering with Navistar to work on hydrogen fuel cell semi-trucks, which if anybody ever remember talking with Dick Dangin years ago, he'll tell you, General Motors had a fully functioned hydrogen fuel cell city bus that they donated to the city of Detroit to use in 1968. Okay, yeah, now we know right. that hydrogen is going to be the next. This is going to be the next one because there's no tax abatements on hydrogen fuel cells. They have the technology. They've had it for years, just like they did with electric cars. We got to work on electric cars. You had the technology in the 90s. You had the EV1. You killed it. So anyway, so I'm starting to add all this stuff up, and then I'm going with what the Biden administration is saying that they want to do, and I think that's great. It's admirable. Then you start thinking, wait a minute. If we go to all these electric vehicles to mass produce all these, how many brothers and sisters are we going to put out of work? Because at some point, we're not going to need but just a couple of engines, whether it be gas and diesel, for certain vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of those are going to be all electric cars. I won't need people in transmissions. I won't need people building engines. And that's all plants. That's including the laborers, the line worker, the material people. The shipping, the handling, this could close plants.
You don't need brakes. You don't need brake pads because that's all done in the electric motor. So I said, people don't realize how, I mean, they're saying 30% of the workforce. It's way beyond that when you get into the, I'm going to say, the lower level shops that supply us. They're gone too with a wave of that wand.
Right. So my whole idea with all this information, if you put it all together as a collective, as a package, kind of like following the money, it's very clear what the future looks like for a lot of us workers. It's going to be a lot less of us, a lot less.
Well, actually, it's been clear for 30 years.
It's been clear for longer than that.
General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler have not worked on increasing market share. They've worked on decreasing market share. They got all the markets they didn't consider profitable, and they've been engaging in a war on workers for 30 years, at least.
It's been
longer
than that.
While they've been making war on the workforce, they've been making love to the top union leadership, giving them money for all these appointed jobs, appointed kids. Many of it's very insidious. They've been suckering our union for 30 years. These people have been cooperating with management and their game plan, and I think a lot of our top union leaders are deluded into thinking they're helping us. But if they help build a strong company, they're helping the workforce.
Right. Yep. And on the electric Hummer that's supposed to be coming out for 2022 now, some dealerships got caught raising the prices. And they said the reservations for the first run of the 2022 Hummers filled up within 10 minutes of the truck's release. That's going to run the buyers $112,595, not $135,000, not $165,000, not $200,000, but $112,000. I'd say $113,000. And then coupled with what I saw a couple weeks ago, some of the dealerships who are starting to tie their ways with General Motors because they're refusing to carry the electric vehicles because they don't sell. What are we going to do with a whole bunch of parking lots or dealership lots that are full of EVs that nobody wants to buy? What do we do then?
That's the problem. They're not looking at the different in taste between the consumers on the coast and the consumers in the heartland.
Right. You know, I mean, and let's look at the other side of this that people don't want to talk about. The lithium for these batteries. If anybody's ever heard of strip mining before, it's a very nasty process that rapes the earth in that particular area.
Yep.
Leaves it void of all sorts of things. Now, understand something. Understand something. I'm not saying that the EV is a bad vehicle. It's not. And does it have certain applications? Absolutely it does. And I think it has a great application for inner city vehicles like Detroit, Lansing. What better way to get around the University of Michigan Flint or MSU or in Ann Arbor and the University of Michigan than have a little electric vehicle where you don't have a lot of parking space anyway? You know, you're not going to be driving 100 miles a day. That's a great application. Like you said, if you're pulling a fifth wheel, you're gonna need a heavy duty vehicle, or if you're like somebody that's on this show that likes to get in that little hot rod every now and then and go burn a little carbon off, you know, that's to you, Adrian, and that Mustang.
Yeah, I knew.
Yeah, it was.
But see, I'm not worried about the EVs. I'm really not worried about them.
Right.
Okay, and as I said before to the membership, you know, those people that's got 5, 10 years, you have all types of educational programs through your company or through the UAW.
Tuition assistance program.
To help you pay for education. It's time for people to invest in themselves.
That's right.
Okay, because you know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's no stopping it. Technology has been going on forever, especially in automotive. And it has quite a few years that it goes, and then it goes into a new technology. It's been doing
right.
that all the time. It is up to you as an individual to make yourself more marketable for where you're working. And the other thing is you could take that somewhere else too.
Yep.
We have to start thinking, because our UAW representation that we have in our executive board does not seem to think about the members. You have training centers. Why aren't you utilizing the training centers to train the membership in upcoming new technology?
Adrian, I think I got the answer to that the other
day.
Well,
give it to me.
This is what I was told, and it's sad, but it made sense. The people at the training centers aren't educated enough to train more than two people at a time.
Oh, I believe that.
Old seminars, they can't control 20 to 30 people in that one room because they got the job because they were a somebody or knew somebody or did something or whatever.
Yeah.
They're qualified to do the job they're sitting there sucking the money from.
Well, and see, now we've showed that there's another entity or another part of our UAW that's lacking. Because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So,
well, I don't think if you look at any documentation, being competent is not a requirement to move up in the UAW. You just have to be good at following orders.
Not in a training center. You have to be able to train people.
Yeah, but you have to train according to what you're told you're supposed to do.
Right.
I mean, you know, you look at what's going on in UAW. We don't have many deep thinkers, or we wouldn't be where we are now. If you're a deep thinker, you're not going to be a good fit for the UAW.
No.
Because why,
no.
Why would we continue to work at joint programs that are destroying our union and allowing management to eliminate our jobs? And if you were really concerned about the membership, why would you go along with contracts that cut pay and increase workloads?
Right.
I mean, I remember when I first hired into the truck and bus, they wanted something on your job, you fought it, and you had your committee man's help. You know, if you want to fight a workload now, you're pretty much on your own.
Right.
Do you not think that, and I always have to come back to this, this is some of our own faults, okay? Especially when you start talking about you get these committee people and they're not doing the job for you that they're supposed to do. Well, how do you vote somebody in to be a committee man that's telling you, oh, I just want to get off the line? I mean, because I've heard that.
Wow.
And they get in, too.
What I remember is, oh, man, that guy always buys a bunch of beer right down at the hole in the wall bar. I don't know how many committee men I know that bought a keg of beer on a Saturday and put it in the parking lot.
Exactly. But you would vote for those people. And they don't have a clue as to how to help you.
Right.
Well, they basically don't have a desire to help you.
No, they don't.
That's the problem. And the reason it's all falling apart is if you vote a committee man out of a job who is incompetent, they just put him in an appointed job where he doesn't have to worry about anything like that. All he does is do what the boss, his union leadership, tells him to do.
They don't always get in an appointed job.
Well, around Flint, you pretty much did.
Oh.
Yeah, look at Flint. Every time we got rid of one, they became the jar rep. Boy, did we get screwed.
Yeah.
The
thing is, the number one thing you have to do to be involved in the union leadership now is you just have to be loyal and good at following orders. They don't like people who question what's going on. And they've got a very elaborate systems of rewards and punishments. Like I know I mentioned this once on the show before. People whose, you know, union leaders whose plants got closed and they went and sold a bill of goods to their membership about how they should vote for the contract. Time and time again, these people ended up in a regional position or international position. People who fought the program, told their membership not to vote for it, argued with the international. They ended up working on a plant floor someplace in another plant on second shift.
Right.
What second shift for you all is what, afternoons?
Yeah, what I mean
is
they ended up on a shift they didn't want. You know, they worked 20 years first shift, and they end up in another plant. They're commuting to another plant. You know, it's what's going on is very insidious. The reason very few people fight it anymore is it doesn't pay to fight. It doesn't put any money in your pocket, and you get a lot of frustration, and you get blackballed. I mean, look at our whole appointed system. It's not geared around competence. It's people who are politically astute, who know how to say and do the right things, end up in appointed jobs.
Right. It's a matter of loyalty
at
that point.
So, you know, it's not unlike the, in that regard, it's not unlike the Communist Party, which it actually was patterned after. You know, the the Ruther brothers spent a lot of time in Russia and looked at the way the system was set up there.
Right. Not that it's a bad system, but there's nobody that has the intellect of any of the Ruther brothers.
Or the desire. You know, the Ruthers understood management was evil. These clowns think management's good.
Right.
If management pays you a fat salary, and management hires your kids, and management creates appointed jobs that you can slip your kids into, management's good. It's good for you. The fact that, you know, you lost 1,000 jobs in your plant over 5 years is not all that important to that type person. And that's what our union system is attracting, people that are self-centered. People who are good talkers, and I always felt I didn't care if my committee man had a nasty, rotten disposition as long as he was competent, but people now vote for you because you're nice, because you know how to say the right things.
Right.
Boy, that's the truth.
What's a good book say? Tickle itching ears.
Yeah. That's it. You know, it's just like, in the book of Amos in the Old Testament, it says, can two walk together lest they be agreed? Management can't, and the union can't get along unless they come to agreements. And one of the agreements was basically our union leadership agreed that we were underworked and overpaid. If they didn't believe that, they wouldn't have voted for contracts that cut pay and overloaded jobs.
Divide the membership.
Right.
And divide the membership.
Yep. But they didn't vote for the contracts. They only negotiated the bad contracts.
Right.
The members are the ones that vote for contracts.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And ratify them.
They would not bargain contracts that put the screws to people unless they had the same core beliefs as management.
Okay.
Right. Well, they kind of vote on it, because when they have the sub-council meetings and they do a rollout,
to present
these, they have to vote whether to bring this back to the membership or not.
Right.
And if you remember a contract ago, this last contract, one of the individuals from Ohio told us that we'd be damn fools not to accept this contract. That's how Solidarity House thinks about us.
Well, yeah, they think we are fools.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is, the only thing their only problem they really have is to determine how big of a signing bonus is going to take to get people to swallow a piece of crap.
Right, right, right. To bite the hook, how good of a bait are you going to use?
Yep.
And half the time they don't even know what's in the contract.
Right. They know how big the signing bonus is. That's all they care about.
Right.
So
they willingly vote away their own jobs to get, $5,000 or $6,000 up front. They both make their lives miserable.
So with that being said, how about a fresher view? Workers at an auto parts factory in Norwalk, Ohio are reviving a classic tactic. You guys are gonna love this. They're 8 days into a walkout to demand that their employer recognize their union. The strikers work for Borgers, a German-owned Tier 1 auto parts supplier, meaning they supply parts directly to auto manufacturers. The factory produces wheel well and trunk liners for the companies like General Motors, Ford, Volvo, BMW, and Tesla. Mm-hmm. An overwhelming majority of 170 workers signed union cards with the SEIU Affiliate Workers United and demanded recognition, but the company ignored them, so on January 21st, they walked out. How do you like that?
Well, I see the one bright spot there. It didn't say they were being organized under the UAW.
Yeah.
I was glad to hear that Amazon warehouse wasn't calling the UAW either.
Everyone should be organized under the UAW.
That's correct.
They've already they've got people under this umbrella that shouldn't even be there.
You brought up something really cool, sister.
Under
we need
what
to
umbrella?
Figure out a way to get these people expelled from our union that are convicted. Just doing that alone would save our glorious union a fuckload of money. And benefits even weigh it more. And get these legions for once off my our blood, sweat, and tears, because it was us to put this shit together, not these crooks that are running. You people need to start listening, Doc.
And the umbrella is United Auto Workers, Agriculture, or is Aerospace and Agriculture. That's the umbrella.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Not it's all of this other is not shouldn't even be there. They shouldn't be there. They have different unions for different job classifications.
Right.
The teachers have a teachers union.
Right. Can you picture firefighters or police union or teachers union agreeing to let management outsource their work like the UAW has done? Could you imagine the police union in Flint agreeing to outsourcing 90% of their work and to rent-a-cops? It doesn't happen. The only union that's compliant like the UAW is the UAW. It's the only union that I know of that's officially made management their partner.
All unions have their own little things going on within them.
Right.
Okay, and you may not be privy to it, and you may be. None of them are perfect.
No.
Ours is wrong, though. Ours is wrong. The way it's being ran or operated is wrong.
The other unions don't have a partnership with management.
I won't tell you that they don't.
They're not.
Because I don't know. I don't belong to all other unions.
Well, it's not on paper like with the UAW.
How
I don't
do you
know
of that?
Another single union where management is paying for a bunch of appointed jobs.
How do you know that?
I've never heard of one. I've gone
like
to
you
stuff
said,
like,
you never heard of.
I've gone to stuff like the Labor Notes Conference, you know, and you get some together with some pretty hard nut unionists there. They don't play the UAW's type of game.
No.
They're not afraid to walk. They're not afraid to work the rule. You know, we've given up on work the rule with the UAW. When you go on strike, sometimes it hurts the workers more than the company. But when you work the rule, you hurt the company. When you don't do anything other than what your job requires, and you shut your mouth and don't give management any information, that hurts them. Production slows down. It costs them money, and you keep.
Yeah, we're supposed to always work like that. And so, like I said, I can't always blame it on the people that are in the representation.
I understand what you're saying.
I have to also blame it on the membership because they do not do that. And no one can stop you. If you're working according to the rules.
That's right. But most people go, you know, when you hire a job, you want to do the best job you can.
And
you try to help your employer.
Yeah.
I mean, as badly as in the 1980s, Roger Smith tried to make it sound like auto workers were a bunch of deadbeat, The thing is, most people want to do a good job.
That's true.
And if you see some crap going down the line, you speak up.
That's right.
You don't want trash coming out of that plant. You try to do your best job possible. But the thing is, when management's trying to stick it to you, that's when you need to shut up and stop helping them. People go in these team meetings and blab all kinds of stuff to management. Information they shouldn't be giving them, because
that's
management turns around and uses it against them.
Yep. And I know that one for a fact.
Right.
So I found this article on Labor Notes, and I go to the very end of this. It's two paragraphs long, and I'm going to read it real quick. The reformers in the UAW have their work cut out for them. They must organize for two elections, the referendum to determine whether the union will move to a union-wide vote, and then the election of top officers themselves. Meanwhile, the UAW president, Rory Gamble, has promised to educate the membership on the issues with a union-wide vote, and the administration caucus will likely put its formidable political machinery into action to lobby hard against direct elections. These obstacles can be overcome, however, if UAW members and local leaders come to understand that the democratic control of the organization is essential to building a larger and more potent union. To this end, other people have aspired to transform the UAW back to its militant union that once launched in the Flint sit-down and championed civil rights and took the most powerful companies in the world.
My big concern is the management's political machine. You know, it was just last year that we had local union elections where the rules on the part of union and management, there would be no campaigning. Is that what's going to happen with this?
Yeah.
Some
were allowed, others weren't.
Yeah. So does that mean when this comes up, management's going to say, well, we don't want any discussion of these issues on company property? Are the people who want democracy, are they going to get a fair chance to express their viewpoint? This is the kind of stuff that needs to be communicated to the feds pretty quickly.
Right.
The management and the union leadership have a partnership. We're on the outs. The membership's the unwanted stepchild, really.
Yeah.
Did you see where the Bureau of Labor Statistics released their report last Friday, Scott? In 2020, the percentage of wage and salary workers that were union members in the United States was up, and it's now at 10.8%, up a half percent from 2019. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported, though, that out of this number, 2.3 of these jobs are temporary. How the hell can you – I mean, this is getting beyond gross, sickening, and how can the union even be proud of that? You're making me think I'm doing good by putting a temporary workers figure in there. This person doesn't know if they're going to get to come to work tomorrow. The stress levels on them is like no tomorrow. I mean, it's just wrong in so many ways. Like I said, let's stop these pricks that got their convictions. They're done. Take that away. Bring these people on at whole. We'll get some harmony on the workforce, and then this union can do some great things, like get some of our concessions back, because they're making money hand over fist. Just remember, they've got deep pockets with short arms. We just got to figure out how to get in them pockets. It's there. Look what they gave our big boys that just put it off overseas so we couldn't get any. Think about that one. I'm done.
Right. Right. Wow. That's something. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Bureau of Labor the statistics, if you used to take that percentage out, then you didn't really gain anything in the unionized workers, did you?
No.
Mm-mm.
Well, what was the growth rate in the UAW?
What's that?
Was it negative? Did the UAW lose membership last year?
No, I believe they gained.
Yeah, they gained because of the temp worker.
Yes. And Ford, I believe, how, I do not know how they did this, this last contract before, 2015, Michigan was now illegally a right-to-work state, and if I remember right, the Ford agreement says that the Michigan plants are closed plant status, which would have made it illegal. I mean, I'm not advocating for right-to-work by any means, so that helps nobody out, but I'm just saying that's mandatory for part of your employment. So,
no.
With that being, it's not?
Not at Ford. They can't do that.
Did they change that?
They can't do that. The law,
yeah, they didn't.
Once the law went in that it's right to work, they can no longer have closed shops.
They put that in the 2015 agreement because there's a lot of discussion about that.
But when did
show.
The right to work law come in?
Ooh.
I know Snyder was there, and he signed it in, and it was December, but I don't remember what year that
was
that he did that. Now, that contract, and it did say, I do remember something about closed shop, but I believe that contract was written before that law went into effect.
2012 signed the House Bill 4003.
2012 he signed that?
Yep.
And you say it's in the 2015 contract?
Yes, ma'am.
Because I have that contract.
Yep. But, well, we have 2 minutes left in the show, so we'll have to give you some food for thought.
Yeah, it'll give me something to look up.
Yeah, there you go. Because we talked about that when we were going through the contracts. We did 17 shows in 21 days, if I remember right, in 2015. Remember that, Don?
I do.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, we did a show every night.
Had Brian on. We had a bunch of people.
Uh-huh.
Yep. We had people broken up, and people were looking at different parts of each contract as they were putting out the highlights and then the contract that looked like it was going to happen. We put them out there, and we told people about every one of these to vote no. We told people
I
Christ, you're going to get screwed the second time. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So
yeah, I voted no for quite a few years there.
Absolutely.
But,
Well, remember those famous words of Joseph Stalin, doesn't matter how the votes are cast, all that matters is who counts the vote.
Who counts the vote.
Counts
so
the vote.
We don't know if these contracts have really passed or not.
Because they didn't pass. 51 to 49, come on.
Yep.
They did that one for years.
Yep.
So
no,
we have
who's going to be counting the votes?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Who's
on the referendum there?
That's right.
Who's counting the votes?
So we have about 50 seconds left in the show.
Good night, you rabble rousers.
Good night,
right on, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Good night, Paul.
Good night, everybody. Be safe. Think smart. Work
good night,
smart.
Gary. Don't work too hard. 313. Yeah. Calling. Don't work too hard. There's two of us.
Everybody be safe.
Two of us are working tonight. So.
And don't forget to work the room.
There you go.
Here.
There you go.
Well, when I say when you gotta go, you gotta go.
Oh, we gotta go.
Good night, everybody.
See you next time. PM Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, the UAW Factory Whistle Show. Good night, everybody.
Good night.